Margaret, though to speak it in her presence was an assault so dreadful that her only recourse was to flee.
"I come to you on business, Mr. Nicholson," Shepherd began. He held the bowl of his pipe in his fist against his breast as he spoke. "Our present jailhouse is little better than a corral, a holding pen. There is scant light and insufficient air. To ventilate, we prop open the door upon a chain, and I sit beyond the doorway with my rifle on my knees. It is untenable. We haven't the resources to cope with more experienced criminals, more sophisticated crimes. A murder, say."
"No? Yes, yes," Nielsen said. "Of course."
There was a pause, and then Shepherd continued. "If you will forgive my pessimism," he said, "I believe that Hokitika is about to meet a darker time. This town is at a threshold. Digger law is still the creed of the hills, and here, why, we are but a backwater of Canterbury still, but soon we will be the jewel in her crown. Westland will split, and Hokitika will prosper, but as she rises, she will have to reconcile herself."
Reconcile?
"The savage and the civil," Shepherd said. "You allude to the natives, the Maori tribes?" Nielsen spoke with a touch of eagerness. He cherished a romantic passion for what he called the tribal life. When the Maori canoes came strong and flashing through the Bulla Gorge, he had seen them from a distance. He was quelled in awe. The warriors seemed terrible to him, their women unknowable, their customs fearsome and primitive. His transfiction was closer to dread than to reverence, but it was a dread to which he sought to return. In fact, Nielsen had been first spurred to make his voyage to New Zealand by a chance encounter with an able seaman at a roadside inn near Southampton, who was boasting, rather improbably as it turned out, of his own encounters with the primitive peoples of the South Seas. The sailor was a Dutchman, and wore his jacket cut short above his hips. He had traded iron nails for coconuts. He had permitted island women to place their hands upon the white skin of his chest. He had once made a present of a knot to an island boy. "What kind of knot?" Nielsen begged, coming forward. It was a Turk's head. Nielsen did not know it, and the seaman sketched the looping floral shape upon the air. But Shepherd shook his head at Nielsen's interjection. "I do not use savage in the native sense," he said. "I allude to the land itself. Prospecting is an ugly business. It makes a man start thinking like a thief. And here the conditions are foul enough to make the diggers still more desperate."
"But the diggings can be made civil."
"Perhaps. After the rivers are spent. After the prospectors give way to dams and dredges and company mines. When the forests are felled. Perhaps then."
"You do not have faith in the power of the law," Nielsen said, frowning. "Westland is soon to have a seat in Parliament, you know."
"I see that I am not making myself clear," Shepherd said. "Will you allow me to begin again?"
"By all means." The jailer began immediately, without altering his posture or his tone.
"When two codes of justice are available at once," he said, "a man will always use the one to inveigh against the other. Consider a man who thinks it just and right to bring a complaint to the magistrate's court against his own whore, expecting both the exercise of the law and his exemption from it. He is refused, and perhaps he is even charged for consorting with the girl. Now he blames the law and the girl both. The law cannot answer for his digger's sense of what is due, and so he takes the law upon himself and throttles her. In former days he would have solved his quarrel with his fists at once. That was digger's law. Perhaps the whore would perish or survive, but either way, his action was his own. But now he feels his very right to demand justice has been threatened, and that is what he acts upon. He is doubly angry, and his rage is doubly spent. I am seeing examples of this kind every day.
Shepherd sat back and replaced his pipe in his mouth. His manner was composed, but his pale eyes were fixed very intently upon his host. Nielsen never refused an opportunity to provoke a hypothetical.
Yes, but to follow your argument, he said, surely you are not suggesting a preference for Digger's Law?
Digger's Law is Philistine and base, Governor Shepherd said calmly. We are not savages. We are civilized men. I do not consider the law to be deficient. I mean to point out merely what happens when the savage meets the civil. 4 months ago, the men and women in my jailhouse were drunks and petty thieves. Now I see drunks and petty thieves who feel indignant and entitled and speak righteously as if they have been unjustly tried, and they are angry.
But again, to conclude, Nielsen said, after the whore is throttled, after the digger's rage is spent, surely the civil law then returns to condemn this man. Surely he's punished justly, in the end.
Not if his fellows rally round him to preserve his digger's rights, Shepherd replied. No man holds to any code as strong as he does when his code's affronted, Mr. Nielsen, and there's nothing more brutal than a gang of angry men. I've been a jailer 16 years.
Nielsen sat back in his chair.
Yes, he said, I take your point. It's this twilight that's the danger between the old world and the new.
We must do away with the old, Shepherd said. I will not suffer whores, and I will not suffer those who frequent them.
Shepherd's autobiography, a document which, if ever penned, would be rigid, admonishing, and frugal, did not possess that necessary chapter wherein the young hero sows his oats and strays. Since his marriage, his imagination had conjured nothing beyond the squarish figure of Mrs. George, whose measures were so familiar and so regular that he might have set his pocket watch by the rhythm of her days. He had always been irreproachable in his conduct, and as a consequence his capacity for empathy was small. Anna Wetherill's profession did not fascinate him in the least, and he had no boyhood memories of tenderness or embarrassment to soften him towards the subtleties of her trade. When he looked at her, he saw only a catalogue of indiscretions, a volatile intelligence, and a severe want of promise. That a whore might attempt to take